Canada is going to start allowing for legal euthanasia for the mentally ill. They already allow assisted suicide for those who are terminally ill. On this episode of 360 View, we take a look at how other parts of the world are handling assisted dying, as well as the religious components. Let's get started. Hello, I'm Skynell Hughes, and remember in 2009 when the candidate for United States Vice President Sarah Palin introduced the concept of death panels as Americans were learning the details of the Affordable Health Care Act? Now, President Obama at the time acted quickly to dispel the rumor. However, her concept was not true in America. Other countries around the globe have for many years had the option of medically assisted suicide. Assisted dying practices, which include euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide, or PAS, have expanded significantly around the world over the past 20 years. Over 280 million people in 11 countries around the world have access to the end-of-life option, with more countries looking to adapt laws which give the option more. Up until recently, this option was only given to those patients who are terminally ill. However, in Canada and Belgium, laws have been adopted permitting people with chronic, grievous, and irremediate conditions and physical disabilities to commit suicide, even if they are not terminally ill. But opponents worry about making euthanasia available to such a broad spectrum of ailments, including even some involved with mental health. Is medically assisted suicide becoming a routine medical option rather than an extraordinary measure available only in very limited situations? In Canada alone, through December 30, 2021, 31,000 Canadians have received assisted deaths. Of those, 224 were not terminally ill. They were just taking advantage of last year's amendment. Joining me now is Keith McHenry, co-founder of the global movement Food, Not Bombs. Thank you so much for joining me on this.
Yeah, thank you. This is such an important issue.
It is, and not many people are talking about it. It's an issue that's been around. My mother was telling me how she even did a report when she was in high school on euthanasia, so it's nothing new, but it's obviously becoming something more and more adopted by many countries around the world. I want to start with this disturbing new fad of medically assisted suicide. Do you see this as an opening of Pandora's box in regards to the legal power to end one's life, or is this a humane solution?
No, this is not only a chilling legal, change. But the thing is, it's also creating an atmosphere where it's okay for our society to let people, die because of poverty, basically, or some other emotional issues. So what got my attention was when I saw a local newscast of a man by the name of Amour, who was perfectly healthy. I mean, he had the ailments of any person in their 60s, arthritis and so on, but he was not terminally ill at any means. And he told City News that he had chosen what they call medical assistance in dying, or the cute term MAID, because he feared becoming homeless. And a rather substantial number of Canadians, since this law has been updated, have taken that choice as opposed to ending up living on the streets. And in a country as wealthy as Canada, why can I not accommodate people who have basically physical disabilities or inability to afford their where they're living? In his case, the building was going to be destroyed, and he could not, in several years, find a new location that his pension could afford. So he had chose to die instead. There's another man, Lee Laundrie, 65, he decided he could not be homeless himself. He couldn't face the prospect. So he was able to apply for MAID, and he is basically one signature from one doctor away from terminating his life, as opposed to receiving adequate housing or adequate income to afford housing. And the doctors in Canada in the last year or two, maybe 2 years now, have been suggesting if people, their medical bills are going to be too high, that they could take advantage of MAID. And I know there's one really chilling case of a veteran from the Canadian military who was given that option, that her basically her disability, which was a wheelchair, to accommodate for make it accessible to her housing. So she said, well, look, at you know, it's costs a lot of money to you know, make it possible for you to come and go from your home, so why don't you choose MAID? And this is just a number of just chilling cases where it's not about physical health. It's about saving money to the Canadian health program and the Canadian government, apparently. I think it's part of surplus population control, and they're just basically considering low-income people useless eaters. And I have relatives and friends who've actually confronted this in Canada, and one of my best friend's aunts took advantage of MAID, even though she really was just an older person with the same kind of, you know, pains and suffering that we all have as older people.
I can't, this is still just mind-blowing to me that in 2023, this is what we're finding. And it sounds like it, and do you worry that this is going to be the new standard to circumvent the work and resources needed to deal with the disabled or needy, not only in Canada, but other countries might start taking these same policies and using them in their situations?
Yeah, I'm very concerned because the policy in Canada started out as death with dignity, like we have here in California where I live, and then it just keep moving the goalposts. So, for instance, Canada, their next thing is in March of this year, you can have yourself euthanized if you have a mental health crisis. So, you know, you apparently are mentally well enough to decide to end your life through MAID, but you're not, you know, mentally well enough to live. You know, this is really shocking. So years ago, I had had fibromyalgia, was suffering horribly for 20 years. And many people with fibromyalgia end their life prematurely because it is such a horrible disease. But the thing was, I ended up doing a water-only fast for 23 days, and I completely cured myself, and I've had like a totally healthy 10 years since then. Imagine the other people who lost that opportunity because they were forced into a position where they had to do MAID. And what's even more chilling is there's a woman named Jennifer Hatch who is featured in a ad produced by Simons, which is a department store in Quebec. And she was only 37. They made this beautiful ad about how wonderful it was that she would be ending her life through MAID. Her issue was that she could not find adequate housing for her illness. And so instead she chose this, and they made a flowery, you know, it makes it sound like, oh yeah, isn't it beautiful to just do MAID and die?
Now,
and for that to be on TV in Canada is outrageous.
Well, what scares me is I'll be the first to say the American healthcare system is broken, and there's definitely reforms that are needed in here. But so often people look at Canada, the UK, other countries that have free healthcare. Nobody ever talks about this is the consequence of free healthcare. When you rely on the government for healthcare, you literally rely on it until death do you part. And I'm also worried, as we have a major divide already, wealth divide in the world, do you think that this could cause those who might be more wealthy be given better treatment options while they're on this earth because they can pay for it?
Oh, I agree that that is a very bad consequence of this. Another consequence is we can see like the total you know, hatred for workers in the United States, for example. Yeah, we're to blame for inflation, and so we need to become unemployed. You know, it's definitely social engineering that could be really tragic. And I am very concerned that what MAID in Canada actually opens the door to is for people feeling comfortable of others without resources being euthanized. And we can see that there's no actual plan to, you know, for instance, in my case, I feed the homeless for the last 40 years. And instead of like providing access to housing and things that, you know, we're in the California is the wealthiest, you know, state in the country. And yet they just let our people live all over the streets and really provide no resources for people. And I'm very concerned that what will happen, and there's been proposals by local politicians here in Santa Cruz to place everyone in military facilities And those facilities could ultimately, which are way out in the middle of nowhere, and who knows if it becomes accessible, you know, acceptable by the general public, because these are like, you know, just worthless individuals from the perspective of those in power, that they just, you know, you sign a document that you get yourself euthanized at the facility because they can't afford to feed you anymore, even though they can afford every other luxury thing that comes down the pipe, including war, you know, which is, of course, the name of our group is Food Not Bombs. And we sent twice as much money to the Ukrainian war effort as it would cost to end homelessness in the United States, which would be a benefit for everyone, because who really wants to go down our streets and see so many people suffering and people like having, you know, emotional breakdowns in public and so on? No one wants that, including right. The people living outside on the streets. Why don't we spend money on housing our people, providing medical treatment that's accessible in this country? But one of the things that I was all for and am in general for Medicare for All, but when Medicare for All ends up mandating things like cost-cutting measures, including things like MAID or other kinds of interventions that are against your will, it makes me question whether this is necessarily the best policy, but everybody should deserve access to health care. But in conditions the way society is organized now, I'm not sure that's very safe.
And that's something that I think we don't discuss enough when we talk about what could be the end results for governments when they run out of money and they're still expected to take care of the people. Thank you so much, Keith McHenry, for chatting with us on the subject. I have to say, you're one of the few people who are actually willing to go on the record and talk about it. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be on your program. I was so excited to be invited.
Anytime.
Take care. Bye-bye, everyone.
So after the break, we are going to talk about the ethics involved with this push for euthanasia policies around the globe. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you are watching 360 View. We have been talking about physician-assisted suicides, or euthanasia, practices across the globe. Joining me now to share his horrifying story about a euthanasia program in Canada called MAID, or Medical Assistance in Dying, which even offered to pay his family if he chose to have medically assisted suicide instead of surgery, is Brett Bucky Schmidt. Bucky, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, you have a disease called neurofibromatosis type 2, or NF2, which for our audience is a genetic condition that causes tumors to grow all along your nerves. The tumors are usually non-cancerous or benign, but may cause a range of symptoms. So I have to ask you, Bucky, what is your life like, and how does NF2 affect your daily life and even planning for the future?
It kind of throws you for a loop because of the way that it manifests, it affects your inner ears on both sides. So because the electrical stimulus from your nerves stimulate your inner ears, it creates a lot of noise inside your head, which can get pretty trying at times. It gets a little much because your brain's kind of going Mach 90 24/7.
Wow. Well, and I mean, it sounds like, you know, probably a lot worse than tendonitis that we've heard. Obviously, lots of people suffer for multiple reasons from throughout their life. And when you were diagnosed, you seemed to have to fight your own doctors or even the medical community in Canada because you found the surgery that you wanted and it was deemed elective, even though there was this fast-growing tumor that you were having to deal with. How long was it, do you think, from your initial diagnosis until you received the surgery that you wanted? And you also had a battle to get the doctors to sign off. Let's start with, first of all, the surgery. How long was it from then to when you actually were able to get the surgery?
Right. So when all my stuff was diagnosed was in 2015. So I had one tumor at the front up here, frontal lobe area, called a meningioma. And they're not as concerned with meningiomas because they typically grow quite slowly. This one up here in 2015 measured 2 millimeters. And then in January of 2021, it had grown to 10 millimeters. So it grew, basically a little bit every year over the course of 6 years. And then from January of 2021 until I had another MRI done in July of 2021. And that's when they found that this tumor had gone from 10 millimeters to 25 millimeters. So it grew 2.5 times in size in 6 months, which they said was very unusual, and that their recommendation would be either radiation therapy or surgical resection. And they explained to me that typically the process would be to remove surgical resection, because then they can get an actual tissue sample and they'll be able to classify what type of tumor it is, so that future radiation therapy is that much more effective. So basically it was the end of July 2021 when they had found it, and I'd called my oncologist to talk to him about it. He had explained that he was going on holidays, so I had to wait a couple of weeks till he got back. And then so when he returned, then they, because the timing-wise, by that point, we were already toward the end of August. So it was discussed to just wait until November, and then they would have another look at it then. So when they did finally look at it in November of 2021, the recommendation was to remove it. And when the discussion came up about removing it, I was asked quite a few times about getting a shot. When I declined, that's when my surgery was reclassified to elective surgery, and they basically said they would let me know. So I ended up waiting from then until August of 2022. So it was...
Wow. Just recently. That's literally just recently here. You waited that long saying it was an elective surgery. Here you have this rapidly growing tumor that might even be benign, but it's still having an effect on it. Meanwhile, this also is the same time you were having a hard time. So you've got a rapidly growing tumor. You have a hard time getting doctors to sign off on your disability. So you were losing money as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. Basically, when in November, when they did their next MRI, that's when my comment to them was, because of the, you know, getting something, I was no longer employed. And so I wanted to apply for short and long-term disability. And basically I had oncologist and neurosurgeon tell me that, because my comment was, why did it go 6 years it didn't grow? And now all of a sudden it did. And the only thing that had changed in my life was work. I was literally, because as the manager of my office, I was literally covering five positions by myself. So I'd been working 14 to 16 hour days, 7 days a week. And both of them literally just laughed and said, stress has no effect on tumors. And so the, basically that, and as far as they were concerned, I shouldn't have any symptoms, negative symptoms. So they couldn't sign anything, you know, so that I, from that point, then I basically had to wait until I had filed a complaint with the, with their bosses. And it took from then until, oh, I think it was like April or May.
Right.
Then all of a sudden I got a new oncologist and a new neurosurgeon. So rather than sign the papers, they just delayed everything, just kept pushing it out.
So let me get this right. You have a rapidly growing tumor in your head. You're losing money because you can't work and nobody will help you in the assistance. The reason why we have safety net programs like disability. Do you, why do you think this is, do you think this is being done on purpose and for what reason?
My personal opinion is, yeah, it sure seemed like it, because when they told me this, then I, that very specific day, I'd actually called in to my cancer clinic and said, okay, well, can I just have a copy of my records? Because then the way I was reading the disability thing was that it was just to confirm diagnosis. So I, you know, I thought my medical records, that I can send those in. And they, that's when they basically told me, well, no, this isn't how you go about getting your records. You need to do this process. And then that's when the woman on the line said, oh, but I do have some great news for you. And I said, but you know, what's the great news? And that's when she said, well, you qualify for the federal government's MAID program. And they've heard rumors that early people adopt, or early adopters might get some bonus free money, is the way they put it. And I mean, I don't really consider it free. It's my own money.
Bucky, this is incredible. But Bucky, this is incredible for me. It's your life. So literally they're saying you don't get money from disability. You don't get, you know, you're not going to get this surgery that you wanted because we've classified elective. But hey, guess what? You qualify for assisted suicide and your family might get paid for it too. At that point, did you feel like you were living in the Twilight Zone at that stage?
Honestly, I really did. I was, because I, well, when she told me that on the phone, I didn't know what MAID was, so I had to go look it up, and I looked it up, and I was like, I mean, really, you're telling me that my, and this is from my care team telling me, you know, that this is great news, and I was just, what I started to think was, okay, well, I see why they don't want to sign my disability paperwork, because if I did get short and long term, I mean, I don't know how long they last, but I think they can go for years. So, I mean, how do you force somebody to do something that they don't want to if they're on that? So here, what our doctors do, they report to the provincial, which would be in the States, would be the, you know, state governing bodies. So here it's the Provincial College of Physicians and Surgeons. The way that I interpret their rules, the way things are set up, is the college basically just tells all the doctors, hey, you know, whatever this, it's perfectly just, and they tell them basically don't sign anything.
Bucky, I have to, you know, I could go all day with this story right here, because it just is horrifying to me on this one. You had your surgery in August 22, just seven months ago. You're here. I'm glad you didn't take that option, because you're obviously very productive. You're still adding to society. Real quick, I did see they actually followed up to make sure that you weren't going to reconsider taking the suggestion of going down the MAID path, correct?
Yeah. And so I had my surgery on August 18th, and in middle of November here. So it was basically a year from the first time that they had told me this. I got a call, and I thought it was for my surgical follow-up, and it wasn't. It was them calling to ask if I had, you know, reconsidered their MAID opportunity, as they called it. Oh. So I'm not sure what kind of opportunity that is to... you know, but, and like I say, even my surgical follow-up was supposed to be 3 weeks, is what they told me. I literally just had it last week. It was 4.5 months for my 3 week, And my 3-week surgical follow-up was over the phone.
It's amazing.
I haven't even seen a doctor, so.
Well, Bucky, I'm glad you made the right decision, and we're going to wish you the best of health. Please stay in contact with the show if there's anything we can do for you. I really appreciate you joining me and sharing your story.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you. Wow. The life expectancy for the world in 2022 was about 72 years. And while countries in the West are starting to actually see increased life expectancies because of modern medicine and better health and practices globally, just because humans are living longer doesn't necessarily mean they're living better. And as a struggling society are sometimes seen as a drain of government resources, as in implementing doctor-assisted suicide a viable solution, which should even be under consideration, death can be seen as tragic. Or it can be seen as merciful, depending on the situation surrounding the deceased. But in societies which continue to devalue human life and individuals, this could easily be seen as a way of shucking their responsibilities. This could also be a way of opening Pandora's box by giving the power to end a life legally based on the quality of life, which is completely subjective. You know, with more countries discussing allowing euthanasia based on psychiatric issues like Belgium, one can only come to the conclusion this option is going to continue to grow for a growing list of ailments. And when governments are looking to combat the rise in healthcare costs, it should be especially alarming. When governments allow euthanasia to even be an option to the solution. Even worse, if the doctors themselves are pushing this as the best medical option, when there are obvious other choices. How is research and development of future treatments and drugs going to be impacted when all you can do is just terminate the life? With the option of euthanasia, we become a more lazy society, looking for an easy solution to a problem rather than actually having to put in the work needed to find the solution. But whatever the justification which someone or a government might use for euthanasia, there is no ethical or moral reason which can justify playing the role of God. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.